You are now listening to the Steve Des Island podcast. Get ready for some tropical conversations and some refreshing guests. Now, here's Steve Des.
Hey, what's going on, people? Steve Des in the freaking building. Yeah, it's me, Steve Des, and I'm here with a brand new Steve Des Island podcast. The podcast I bring my most amazing and talented and also pretty famous friends. Yeah, they're pretty famous out here in L.A. And they come from all over the world here to Hollywood to charm you guys with their talent and their amazing qualities and insightful points of views. Yes. And today's guest is really extremely special because she is not only a terrific improviser.
Why, thank you.
She is also an amazing actor and great Aussie. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Prudence Vinden.
Yay. Hi, guys. Thanks for having me, Steve.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Absolute pleasure to be
all
here.
All the way from Australia,
all
Sydney.
14-hour flight, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty tough.
We were just talking about the Spice Girls.
Yeah.
And how much we love the Spice Girls.
Yeah, love the Spice Girls. Had a Spice Girl party when I was in year six. I was posh Spice, no big deal.
Oh, okay.
Know all the moves.
Nice, nice.
Which one was your favorite?
My favorite was the redhead. At the time.
Yeah, yeah, Ginger Spice.
Ginger Spice, yeah. I had a big crush on Ginger Spice.
Yeah, yeah.
I like the baby Spice too, the blonde one.
Yeah.
But I was a big fan of the redhead at the time.
She was again. Cool because she was sort of the most outspoken and just did what she wanted.
I feel she's the only one that didn't age appropriately.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
Like the other ones look way better than her now.
Yeah. I think she probably just hit life hard, you know?
Maybe.
So now it's catching up with her. No, she still looks pretty good, though. The old Jerry Halliwell.
But before, I mean, you know, 90s Ginger Spice, yeah. that was when she looked the hottest.
Mate, the one where she wore a tea towel for just most of the video.
Mm-hmm.
You like that one?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then she, when she took off with that solo career that didn't do anything for her.
Yeah.
And all that was like,
They kind of all tried to do that a little bit, didn't they?
A bit. I mean, Mel B is doing stuff right now.
Yeah.
Because she's doing the America's Got Talent.
She actually was living, like, around the corner from me in Australia, in Rose Bay. Her kids went to, like, the Rose Bay school because she came and did, I don't know what show it was, like, X Factor or something in Australia. And she was one of the judges.
Okay.
So she was living there for a while.
Oh.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Mate, having Eddie Murphy's baby also.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, but you know how celebrities are, hooking up with each other all the time.
Yeah. But wasn't there some big scandal? Like, he tried to deny it at the beginning, and then she went and got a paternity test. Turned out it was his.
Yeah.
Yeah, something. I can't remember the exact details, but.
I mean, but that's every black parent in America.
Oh,
I'm totally joking, guys. Totally joking. No, but back in the day, it was pretty frequent. That's the whole birth of the whole Maury, Jerry Springer. I'm not the baby.
Do you think that's real? It's not real.
It's not real anymore.
Yeah.
But I'm certain there were, you know, I'm certain that there were a lot of problems of those because there were a lot of people that didn't want to take responsibility. But, of course, it's a show, and the demand is high in the sense of, like, they probably pump, like, about, I don't know, 18 episodes in 20 days, you know, or something like that. And since the demand is so high, they need to fabricate stories or say it's based on the truth. Like, for example, right now, I'm most likely going to Miami next week. For 3 days because I'm going to be shooting a show for Telemundo.
Yeah.
And it's like one of these, like, you know, court shows. But it's all fake.
Yeah.
It's like, it's all like, it's not fake entirely. Like, it's, they use actor to portray real cases.
Yeah.
Or at least that's what they like to say.
Yeah.
And it's basically, that's what it is. But it's because the demand is so high. Like, that show, it's a brand new episode every single day from Monday to Friday.
Mm.
So the demand is so high that they have, there's no way you're going to get, you know, five cases every from Monday to Friday that's completely real, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's pretty much that and dating shows. And, I mean, dating shows being fake since ever.
Yeah, our friend was on the dating show.
Yeah.
Sarakate. I can't remember the name of the dating show, but it was awesome.
Yeah. It was pretty. I mean, I didn't watch it. Just it was super late.
Yeah,
right?
It was like 2 a.m. We all went over to her house and watched it at 2 a.m.
Yeah, she invited me, but I was like, I think I don't know what I had that day, but I was
a busy man. You're probably doing a podcast early the next day.
Well, not really. At that time, I didn't even know what a podcast was.
Yeah,
not entirely. I wasn't a big fan of that time.
Yeah,
but then as
now you converted. Yeah, Steve was just telling me all of the podcasts that he subscribes to, and I've got to get involved. I didn't even finish.
I only told you like three.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm.
Steve and I met in Groundlings
Groundlings. The Groundlings. Shout out to the Groundlings.
Yeah. I'm going to check out their podcast.
Yeah. Have you been to a Groundlings recently?
I haven't because I just got back and I was only supposed to be here for a little while, but I kind of just keep staying because I've got 3 months on this visa stuff, blah, blah, boring. But, yeah, I think I'm going to try and do another class, like the next level, because you just kind of have to slowly work your way up, don't you?
Yeah, pretty much. That's all it takes in the Groundlings. You get it. Well, not just in the Groundlings, like everywhere in Second City and all those places, but in Groundlings seems to be the hardest one to, like, climb up just because they sometimes bring you down.
Yeah, get you to repeat or whatever.
Yeah,
but I think that's kind of good because then the people who are at that top level really are good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they don't just let you through if you pay the money.
Yeah. No, I think that's great.
It can be a bit soul-crushing at times.
But. Yeah, it's definitely soul-crushing. I have tons of friends that either have been extremely excited because they keep moving up, or they just get crushed because they just have to repeat and repeat and repeat.
Yeah. I had one experience with a friend where the teacher was just encouraging the whole time, and so she fully thought, you know, yeah, I'm going to go on to the next, and then he only let, like, one person in our whole class go up. So
it's just
one of those things, isn't it? You just have to take it and go, all right, well, I'm going to keep going because it's what I want to do, or, you know, decide to do something else. But it's just like the whole industry really is like that.
Pretty much.
I think every day, I'm just gonna go and be a secretary again, you know? Like, but then something little happens and a friend says, oh, let's do a short or something, and you just keep going somehow, don't you? Do you ever feel like that?
Oh, yeah.
You're such a go-getter, though. I love hanging out with people like you because you're always doing something and you're proactive about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's so important to just keep creating stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like when we came into the industry, it was very much up to the bigger people above us. Like, we'd just be auditioning or what have you, and then if you got an opportunity, then you'd rise up like that. But I think this whole wave's happened now with YouTube and access to, like, better cameras and stuff where people can create content, you know? And that's sort of what it's turned into if you're creating your own stuff. And I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, it is. And the great thing about this era in particular is because of that, it's like you don't have to wait on someone to give you an opportunity per se.
Yeah.
Like, you can totally, if you have, it doesn't matter if, I mean, now the demand is HD and all that stuff just because we have moved so far in advance in technology. But still, if you have a little camera, you can make stuff happen.
Mm.
And that's how I started. It was like I was literally bored at my house.
Yeah.
And I only had like one camera and that's it. And that's when YouTube was sort of starting. It was like 2 years in probably. Yeah. And I just started making...
Some microphone messages come up.
Yeah, don't worry about that. That's going to pop up on and off. At least that one, don't worry about it. If something else pops up, just let me know. No, don't worry about it. But basically, yeah, I was in my house bored, and I created all these little YouTube videos and stuff, and I'm not gonna say they're the most amazing ones.
I want to see them.
I mean, some of them I had to delete it just because of copyright issues.
Why? Did you put, like,
because I used to do a lot of music stuff, also, or at least use popular music and stuff, because I didn't know about the whole royalty-free music stuff that I needed to use. And
I thought if you did it on YouTube, it was fine, but they make you take it down.
Yeah.
just I use heaps of music that I shouldn't have then.
Yeah, they make you take it down also because, especially now, they now pretty much anybody can make an account, a YouTube account, upload like 3 videos, and they already can profit off of it. And before, it used to be a struggle. Like, I remember when I started YouTube. At first, when I started YouTube, you couldn't make any money off of YouTube. Like, it was literally, you were just doing it for fun. Which, in a way, that's why I really, that's why I even gravitated towards YouTube. Because I'm like, oh, this is a fun place.
Yeah.
And we're just having fun and making videos, with, you know, and it's a community. And it was really awesome. Then, when the whole, oh, you can make money off of it, came along, that's when the whole game changed. Because the only way you could have made money was if you became a partner with YouTube, which it was you have to send all this long application, and it will take like almost a month, maybe two sometimes, for them to review it. And if you get rejected, you cannot apply for like 6 months.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it was...
Now everyone and their dog's making like... money off it. There's people who make their whole careers.
Yeah, there's a kid right now that has a camera and makes literally like he can make 3 videos of himself just talking. They already can.
Kids are the funniest.
They can monetize.
But they are, because kids like, but it's kind of disturbing, isn't it? At the same time, that it, like, how old's this kid? 12 or something, or older than that.
What kid?
The kid that you said he was making.
No, I'm saying any kid. I'm just saying any kid in general. Right, right. Yeah, like any kid can literally grab their webcam, make a video talking about sports or whatever it is, and they already can profit off of it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they're going to make... I mean, some kids...
I thought you were like referencing a particular...
Oh, no. I'm not referencing... No. I'm just saying like how times are changed, you know? Like before, for me, I was trying super... Like I got rejected probably like 4 times before I even got partnership.
Yeah.
So imagine all the waiting I had to do, and all that stuff. And
so, are you partnershiped on YouTube now, or did that change?
Yeah, I've been partnered with YouTube since 2010, I believe.
Okay. Oh, cool.
But it's not like you have to crank up certain amount of views. Like for example, for every. Again, for every channel, it varies because it varies if you have if you're with a label and things like that and blah blah. But let's say for every basically how it was how for every 1,000 views you get like $2.
Yeah, it's not much.
Yeah. So basically, what people want is for their video to be viral for them to even make some money.
Yeah,
you know. Some kind of money. Of course, if you go crazy viral Gangnam Style, then you made it.
I reckon there's going to be a new wave of sort of like studios owning YouTube channels, and I think it's already happening.
Look at Netflix. It's like the power of TV and all that is changing.
Yeah.
Because Netflix has their own series that are super successful. Orange is the New Black.
Mm.
They have this one, House of Cards.
What do you reckon Derek. Will happen on, like, specifically on YouTube, though? Do you think they'll sort of funnel that? Because I feel like there's all of these creative people out there making content and then spending like, you know, $10,000 doing a web series, having great production value, and then there's nowhere to put it. Like, you put it up on YouTube, but that doesn't garner, you know, automatically garner a bunch of views. So I think what's starting to happen now is people are having channels where they get heaps of subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
And then like there's one specific one I know, Drew Dodge, he's a...
Oh, yeah, I know him.
That Groundling guy, he's hilarious.
The acting teacher one?
Yeah. Everyone look. I don't know if that's how you pronounce his last name. Drew Dodge or Drew Doge or something. Anyway.
Droge.
Yeah, something like that. I just say Dodge. But he's created a channel. And then there's like Funny or Die has a channel.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's going to get bigger. So people will then want to put their content on those channels, and maybe those channels will pay for people to give the content? I don't know. It's an interesting topic because with YouTube, everyone can create now and put it up on the internet. But now there's that next level of, oh, well, I'm creating it and putting it up, but I'm not getting the views I want.
But it don't even go that far. People are getting deals up to this day. Like before, YouTube was the hustle. Like people were hustling of YouTube like, oh, if I make it big on YouTube, I can probably, you know, get a TV deal or, you know, get signed with this big agency.
Do you think it translates though? Because I think it sometimes doesn't translate. Like, if you're a hit on YouTube, like, if you're some funny dude doing weird videos on YouTube for, you know, 3 minutes, they're bloody hilarious. But then if you get signed up with a 30-minute show, I think it just doesn't translate.
I mean, it depends. It depends. Because the hard thing, what everybody wants is to get noticed. That's why they even do YouTube videos. But I've seen people that are they get the amount of views, like they get every video they upload, they get up to maybe 1 million and 2 million, you know. Yeah. Which is viral. But the things that their content is so maybe childish or whatever it is, that people in the industry per se, like they don't take them seriously. Yeah. Because of their content.
Yeah, it's like YouTube-centric, you know? It's just specific to the 3-minute sketch variety. It's not like for a 30-minute. But I think there are these maybe creative, big, not creative, but there are these like producers at the studios or television stations. They're like, oh, that guy's funny. He's on YouTube. We'll give him a show.
Mm-hmm.
And then they develop them and they lose their flair or whatever. So that's also interesting as well. I don't know. It's like this mesh of, because I think with sitcoms, they're so orchestrated and sort of like a puzzle piece that just fits in perfectly. And then you've got YouTube content, which are often just vignettes or sketches that somebody has written, directed, starred in, produced themselves. And so they're these two forms of content. And one's trying to be put into the other. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So personally for me, I prefer when people have done everything themselves, because I think that's more interesting to watch than something that's been whittled down and is like a perfect example of comedy.
Mm.
Like, I don't know if I'm explaining that
properly. No, yeah, you're explaining properly.
See, like Louis, you know, the show Louis.
Yeah, that
he does it all himself.
Pretty much directs it, edits, writes.
And it hasn't been, you know, five studio heads telling him a certain way to do something. So I think that's way more interesting to watch than a sitcom that's been polished. Mm. And I think that's sort of what's happening with YouTube. There's people creating all their own content and then they're hoping to get these deals to get a TV show, and then that's happening, and then they're being sort of funneled into the other structure.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see what the future holds, how that'll all work.
We'll
out.
See. I mean, everything's changing. Like, for example, that's what I'm saying, YouTube is not even the hot place anymore to even be creative or be original, because right now, one beast that's taking off is a beast that you only make a 6-second video called Vine.
Oh, right now, I haven't gone into Vine yet. I'm behind.
You're super behind because like people are getting mad deals of a Vine.
Are you serious?
Yeah, yeah. Vine is an app that really got started literally this year.
Yeah.
Probably at the beginning of the year. Sometime in February or so is when Vine was starting to get attractive to people. Now it's like a whole community. It's already big. You know, the top Viners already have 3 million followers.
Really? And they're getting deals.
Yeah, because they're making videos, pretty creative videos, in only 6 seconds.
That's a talent.
And, you know, for anybody can watch a 6-second video. That doesn't take they only take 6 seconds of your time.
I know, it's so funny, isn't it? When I see a video up on Facebook or something, I'm like, oh, 23 seconds, I don't know. Like, you really sit there and weigh out the if you'll watch it or not. But yeah, 6 seconds, I'd watch that.
Yeah, in 6 seconds, people have made, like, really extremely short movies and really, really funny sketches and things like that. And I've seen people getting tons of deals. Just because they made it on Vine. And
mate, got to get on board of that.
Got to get on board of that. Right, and now. Yeah, it's as simple as you doing it on your cell phone. You know, your cell phone camera, you get a crazy idea that fits for 6 seconds, and you do it. Yeah. And you edit it right there just with your finger. You don't have to do that much editing about it or anything like that.
Yeah.
And you upload it, and it uploads there. And that's the way people are making videos now.
Jeez. Be like a section in Sundance, Vine, best Vine video at the Sundance Film Festival.
I'm pretty sure they will have it pretty
yeah.
soon.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a bit corrupted now because now before what was cool about it was the fact that it will be 6 seconds and it's real time in the sense of like what's happening right now. If I have a funny idea for a sketch, then that's what's gonna happen. But there's not going to be, like, crazy editing about it. But now people have found ways to, like, hack it in the way that they can edit it, like, really professionally and make, like, fire come out of somebody's face or some, you know, things like that. So that's why it took away a bit of the fun, at least on my end, because I preferred seeing stuff, like, real time that people, like, you know, took the hard time to just, like... you know, plan out and do yeah. instead of like doing crazy effects and
yeah,
things
like
that.
Organic stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, but like again, like that's what people are doing right now to get all those deals. So
wow.
get on your
Mate,
Vine
let's
game,
get a
girl.
Vine Station channel happening.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's do it. I'm totally down for it.
What kind of deals do those people get though? Like
Signing with major agencies.
Oh, okay.
And by major, I mean top five. CAA, William Morris,
yeah.
those people. And for that, you know, like movie deals, TV deals, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
People, or if not, they get to work with networks. This dude, Nicholas Megalis, he just got, he was working for MTV, and he's still working for MTV. He's a guy that makes like really he does like crazy cookie videos, but like mainly like
crazy cookie or crazy cooking.
I say crazy cookie.
Cookie.
Like, yeah, cookie. Like oh,
he's
crazy. I don't know. I call crazy people cookie. They're
oh,
cookie.
Okay.
They're,
I was like, how crazy can you get with a cooking show? Like,
no, but he makes like he loops a song, an original song he makes. For 6 seconds.
Yeah.
And when you see the video, the good thing about Vine is that it loops the video. That's what people love about it. So when you see it and it's looping around, it sounds like a song that is repetitive on your head and sketchy. And that's why people like him. It's because it's a, you know, it's a fun song for 6 seconds, but it keeps going. And it's the same lyrics and the same thing going the same way, you know, going and going and going. But then when you listen to it, it's really catchy, and you're, like, singing it throughout the day, and you're like, oh, my God, this catchy six-second song.
As catchy as Miley Cyrus's Wrecking Ball.
That's...
Let me tell you, that is one catchy tune. Do you like it? Have you seen
like
the video
Wrecking Ball.
I love that song. I think it's a really good song.
Yeah, the song is good,
yeah.
definitely.
Yeah.
The video, not so good. But
I think it's good. I like it.
But again, I'm also not a big fan. Like, I understand why the song is big, you know, because that's what kids these days listen to. But I'm not a big fan,
no.
honestly.
Yeah.
Mm.
She's very controversial, I guess.
No, not because of that. It's just I'm just not a big fan of that type of... Like, I'm not a big fan of, you know, Avril Lavigne type of music.
Steve,
you know, like,
you said you liked every type of music.
Well, I like every type of music. I don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I like every single type of music. But there's particular type of music or songs that I rather not listen to.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, this is going crazy.
Sally's blowing up.
I know. I'm pretty pretty popular.
Very important person. You said you don't like Avril Lavigne.
No, I mean, I like her.
I went through a stage where I wanted to be her, like taught myself how to play guitar, everything, and then I realized I couldn't really sing. Hard day.
It's just when, for example, that type of music, I would rather listen to like Green Day and like maybe The Killers or, you know, things like that. Those are the bands I gravitate more towards too.
I can see you being a singer. Have you ever tried to be? Can you sing?
No, I can't sing. I actually was trying to back in like middle school, and yeah. I was actually pretty good.
I can see you being a rapper. Can you rap?
Can I rap? I can rap.
You talk pretty quickly.
Yeah, I can rap. Yeah. I can totally rap.
Yeah, you
should. I mean, my
rap,
skills
mate.
Are not.
You in full cup. It's gonna happen.
Let's do it. Let's yeah. rap. I have actually a friend of mine. He's finishing up a pilot, and he told me like, yeah, you should. There's a rapper character, and I think you can totally do it.
Amazing.
I'm like, yeah, I'll do anything. So, waiting for him to hit me up and be like, yo,
just
film this stuff.
Yeah, no, you got to hit him up.
Pretty much.
When are we filming?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Your accent is so freaking cool.
Oh, thank you.
That's all I'm saying. It reminds me of a person by the name of Chris Lilley.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a big Chris Lilley fan.
Did you know his new show?
Private School Girl?
Yeah, it was on last night in Australia, premiere.
Mm.
So
I'm waiting for it to hit the States.
Find it somehow.
Yeah.
Oh. To watch it. But I've watched a lot of the clips.
Have you watched his previous stuff?
Yeah, all of it.
All of it? Angry Boys?
Have you watched We Can Be Heroes? That's actually the best one.
That's the only one I haven't watched.
It's so funny. Because when I was watching it, it took me like almost the whole episode to figure out that it was like not real. That's how good he is. But then when he dressed up as an Asian boy, I was like, okay, it's not real. But yeah.
The first one I watched, when I knew about him was not that long. It was 2 years ago that I found out about him. It was when I came to LA. Like somebody said,
Have you only been here 2 years?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you'd been here longer.
No, I've been here since 2011.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I haven't been here like all that long.
Yeah.
I've accomplished a lot in this short period of time that I've been here, but I still not be here like that long really.
Yeah.
When I moved out here, somebody on casual conversation mentioned Summer High Tide.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't know what that is. And they were like, oh my God, take this DVD and go and lock yourself in a room and watch this.
Everyone who's listening, go watch Summer High Tide and We Can Be Heroes by Chris Lilley. It's hilarious comedy.
And Angry Boys too.
Yes, Angry Boys.
Angry Boys is
I didn't think that was as good as the other two.
See, at first I was like, because when you watch stuff from a person and it's already so good, it's like watching, let's say you watch Eddie Murphy live on Delirious, for example, one of his greatest specials. You go watch him live and you're like, oh my God, this guy's awesome. And then when he goes back on tour and you go and watch him, you go with the feeling of like, it's probably not going to be as good as that last time, because that last time was pretty good. So you're kind of skeptical. You're trying to see if it really meets your expectations. And that's what happened with Angry Boys with me as well. Yeah. It's like, I was like, it's not going to be as good as Summer High Tide. So the first couple episodes, I was like, it's not really that funny. But then I kept on watching, and I'm like, this is the funniest thing ever.
Oh, he's brilliant, yeah.
Oh, my God. That Asian lady that he does.
Yeah, the mom.
The mom and the black guy.
Yeah.
I love every time
slap
he's like.
Slap your elbow.
And just the fact that he's like, shut up, nigga. And like, I'm like, oh, my God, this is so hilarious.
Yeah. Pushes the boundaries.
He pushes every envelope there is.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I love about him. He really takes chances.
I was actually kind of nervous because I'm nervous to see Jamay Private School Girl because a friend and I have been working on this idea for a show called Eastern Suburbs Mums, where we dress up as the mums and we also play their daughters. And we have these characters that are sort of like Germaine, and it just explores that whole world. And we're just applying to get funding now from Screen Australia. And I'm hoping that the Germaine private school girl isn't too close to what we've like written and everything already. But so I'll cross my fingers. I mean, they're different. They're really different shows because we're playing like the mums and the daughters together and everything. But that's just that's an area which has so much juicy comedy stuff in it, like these private school girls, spoiled children, and the wealthy parents who don't know how to raise them and everything. So I'll be interested to see it for sure.
And you also have a movie coming up.
Yeah, yeah, my friend. It's called Winning Formula. Everybody look that up on Facebook, like our Facebook page and website and everything. So, yeah, the story with that was my friend, my amazing friend Claudia Pickering, wrote a feature film, indie comedy feature, about these two girls, two Australian girls who are backpacking in LA, and they accidentally get embroiled in this drug ring, and they get they gamble with this hectic drug lord and owe him money, and it's just about their story of how they can escape him, pretty much. It's a cracker of a script, and yeah, that's supposed to be coming out in February next year.
Who wrote it?
My friend Claudia Pickering wrote it. She came up with the idea with her writing partner Anna Bennett, and they were going to be in it together, but then Anna couldn't come back over to LA. She's from England. So Claudia asked me if I'd like to co-star in it with her, and I said, hell yeah, because she's great. We've done some comedy stuff before. We've done a web series called Wookiee Era. Look that up on YouTube. And, yeah, worked together with her. She's hilarious. So it was such a fun time of filming. We got to do some crazy stuff.
It's pretty awesome. Seems like you're pretty much connected in the Aussie world.
Yeah,
over there.
Well, all the Aussies kind of stick together.
That's good. That's good to know.
Yeah, and heaps of my friends are so proactive, just like you, Steve, you know, like just making stuff happen. It's really fun to be involved in that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you have to do something. You cannot, if you just lay down and go like, why am I not getting all these opportunities? Because you're not moving around.
Yeah.
You know, and showbiz is a biz that if you're not moving yourself, nobody's going to move for you.
Yeah.
No matter if you have all the greatest agents in the world, you still have to do stuff, you know?
Yeah. Well, specifically my friend Claudia, she's so inspiring. Like, she's actually, she graduated as an architect. So she's a full-on architect. And then she decided that she wanted to do acting and filmmaking. So she produced this thing, with the help of executive producer Lance, and yeah, she just made this feature film happen. I'm just so impressed. We had a fantastic director, Tyler Harrell, and a great DP, Colby Oliver, and I actually haven't even seen any of the footage. I just sort of saw the dailies as we shot, but it looks really amazing. They used a fancy Panavision camera and great lenses and stuff. I'm getting to be a real nerd, like knowing about cameras and lenses, but I think it's really exciting. Have you ever shot anything on the Red?
Yeah.
Oh, that's like my dream. I want to shoot. The next thing I want to do, I've written this short film.
It's a pain in the ass to shoot with, but
all the time and stuff, yeah. Huh? Yeah.
I mean, the quality is amazing. It looks, but it's just to operate great and all that. It's a pain.
Yeah. What else? So it overheats. What else happens? Just,
I mean, yeah, it overheats. Also, there's different types of Reds, but there's one that it needs a person to operate. Like, it's trapped on, and they have like to move around. You never work with that one.
Nah.
They have to put like basically a vest, and like they have it there. Like, they basically break to their body,
yeah.
So they move with it and all that, but it's so heavy,
yeah.
And all that it's, you know, it's always a pain.
Yeah,
it has to be like a pretty big, like me, I will die. You know, it has to be a pretty big person.
Yeah,
to like operate it. But again, there's different ones. There's also ones that are handheld, more handheld, and all that. But
yeah, we were using the Panavision. But I just, the most of the web series I've done, we've just done on like 5D or whatever. I mean, it's really good quality.
Yeah, it's amazing quality.
Yeah,
at the end, is the lenses that make the camera.
Exactly. Yeah. My poor mate, Claudia, she got all her stuff stolen out of her car, all her lenses, all her camera, everything.
Was this in Sydney?
No, I was in San Francisco.
San Francisco?
Yeah. So now we've got to reshoot.
Oh, you San Franciscans.
I know. Shame on you.
Shame on you. I know. Supposed to be the happiest place on earth.
Have you been? I've only
been. I haven't been.
Yeah.
It's, even though it's close, it's still pretty far.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I haven't been. I want to go. I have a friend of mine, a comedian friend of mine coming up from Portland. He's going to do, I think, some stand-up in San Francisco later in next month. So I might go. If I can, I totally will go.
Yeah.
But yeah, I haven't been to the Bay Area. I hear it's beautiful.
Yeah.
I seen pictures and videos and, but yeah, what's amusing about that area for you?
Oh, I've only visited there. I've only been there for one day. So I don't know, but that's where my friend Claudia, who wrote this film, she moved there. She's doing architecture. But I've heard it's a kind of a lot like Sydney, just the community-wise and the people.
Sydney is super liberal? Is there naked people around?
No, only in particular places like on the nude beach or whatever.
No, in San Francisco, it was actually like naked.
Oh, really?
Oh, you didn't know that?
No.
Yeah, there were like people. It was like this big issue because they were fighting. A lot of people were complaining because it's honestly like one or the most like liberal place in all United States. Yeah, and they had like a weird sort of rule. Again, I'm not basing this on total knowledge because, again, I am a total dum-dum with stuff. I just saw this in the news. But apparently, there are people, you know, they're really liberal in the sense of, like, they can be naked and stuff. And they were, like,
hectic.
Naked. Yeah. And it was, like, naked on coffee shop and things like that. And it's, like, a big community of, like, nudist people. And they were complaining because other people were like, hey, we don't want you guys to be naked or, you know, really close. Like, my kid is here. Yeah. And they were like, no, we're liberal. We do whatever we want. That's what we do. And we got to fight for our rights. I don't tell you how to brush your teeth. Yeah. So it was this whole big fight.
It's a bit controversial for my likings. I don't know. Maybe I'll just stick to L.A.
But, yeah, that's San Fran. And it's also the most expensive place to live in the United States.
Yeah.
Period.
Really? More expensive than NYC?
I think so. Yeah, jeez. I believe so. I think like the last poll that they did, it was San Francisco, like one the most expensive place. I believe so. Like they just made I think it was like new studios that are literally like it's like just extremely super small,
yeah.
Like really, really like the size of my bed and that size there. And a door, imagine there's a door right here, bam, just 10 that's by huge. 15. So I'm like that, you know, like really small, yeah. small stuff.
And they were going for
like $800, or $1,000 or whatever,
yeah.
Sydney
is super expensive. Like, I just went back. I was there for only about a month, and I was shocked about how expensive it is. Like, you just go to the supermarket, you think it's going to be $30, and it's like $110. It's crazy.
That's insane.
I know.
What type of, what's your currency?
Australian dollars.
Is it called that, Australian dollars?
Yeah, it's just called
that. So you said,
cash money.
Cash money.
Just
oh, okay.
like you don't say, oh, that'll be $1 US. Okay.
I was going to say, you guys say, oh, yeah, give me 30 Australian yeah. dollars.
No, like my brother's looking to buy an apartment, which is, first of all, extremely depressing because he's 2 years younger than me and I'm nowhere near buying my own apartment.
Mm.
But he went to an auction for like...
Buying or renting?
Buying.
Oh, yes, snap.
Yes.
He's on another level. He's on that Bill Gates level.
Yeah. He's actually a TV presenter. In Sydney. Nick Vinden, World News Australia. He's on like SBS and stuff.
You just got, you know, a showbiz in your blood,
I
in
know,
a way.
Right? I know. Well, Mum was a primary school teacher, so we figure we got a bit from that. And Dad's a courtroom lawyer.
Mm.
We call it a barrister in Sydney. So that's sort of performative as well, I guess. Anyway, so my brother's looking to buy an apartment and it's just hectic. It's so expensive. It's like $700,000 for a one-bedroom apartment.
Wow.
What is this world coming to? Like when my parents bought their house when they got married, it was like $100,000.
Hmm.
You know? I hope people, who knows? I feel like none of my friends are going to be able to afford apartments and stuff, you know?
Hey, there's always the Powerball.
Yeah. I actually bought a lotto ticket just before I came over here, even though I can't win because I'm not a citizen, but I had this whole plan. Do you ever do that where you, like, think things through before they even happen? I do it on a negative level. It's called disaster baiting.
Disaster baiting.
Yeah. If I'm, like, driving my car and I'm like, what would happen if I just accidentally swerved a bit and then I'd, like... My car would roll and then I'd burst into flames and then I like go on to think like how many people would come to my funeral and everything.
I totally think of that. I'm a really negative thinker.
Yeah.
Like I'm constantly thinking, but I don't know, since a kid, but when I walk outside alone, I'm like, what about if a guy comes and jumps me up and like grabs a knife? Like I'm thinking all these elaborate ways I would like get killed.
Yeah, I do that all the time. And then I'm like, but it's kind of funny because it turns from like really horrible. And then I'm like, and then the car would be in flames. And then, you know, the fireman would find my phone and he'd call all my best friends and they'd be so devastated. And then I like picture my funeral and I get really happy because I'm like, so many people would be crushed that I'd
see. Die. I don't picture all the way to the funeral. I stop it at the moment I get killed. Because yeah. When I get killed, I don't, you know, I'm not conscious for the rest of the stuff.
Yeah, but it's your own disasterbation dream, so you can picture whatever you want.
Have you heard of comedian Bill Burr?
Yeah, love him. And he was just in Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Did you watch Breaking Bad?
Not really, but I watched his scene.
Mate, you got to watch Breaking Bad.
I watched his scene with the big guy. He played Huel, yeah. But his name is Lavelle Crawford.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw it just because I have to see what comedians are doing, you know, and I love those guys, especially
is
Bill.
Is he a comedian too?
Which one?
The Yule character.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, cool. I haven't seen.
Oh, him. His stuff is really funny.
So, what's his name again?
Lavelle Crawford.
Lavelle Crawford. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
And Bill Burr talks about he mentions a joke like that about like have you ever thought about. Like when you're driving, you're like this amount away of just moving your hand this way to just crush all these people and become a complete psychopath.
Yeah, I used to think that even when I was younger, like at school in assembly, we'd have assembly every morning and it was this very rigid all-girls school. We wore ties and stuff.
Mm.
And I would just have these visions of me standing up and just being like, oh, 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 you know, or like screaming in assembly. And so it was from a young age.
Yeah.
Just to cause a ruckus. I was looking through my school reports the other day and I found this one that said that Prudence is a class clown.
Hmm.
And I remember being so ashamed of that. I'm going to frame that now. So proud of it. Were you naughty in school?
A little bit. Yeah. Well, growing up, I was really a problem child.
Yeah.
I was really, you know, trying to be a rebel and all that. I would get in detention a lot.
Yeah.
It was just because I realized, like, that was my first encounter with authority, you know, like my problems with authority. Yeah. Just because I knew they didn't give a fuck about none of us, like, at school. They just care about, because I went... I went majority to private school.
Yeah.
So, you know, my mom had to pay and stuff. And so I knew they just cared about the money. And they didn't care about the kids. And I was trying to make stuff happen, at least creative-wise. Because it seemed like I was the or one of the few of the people at my entire school that was really passionate about arts, about like the theater and acting and drama and all this stuff, and they didn't seem to care. And like I wanted to create, like I founded my own club, my own drama club, and it lasted for like a year or so. But I did all that stuff, and I was just trying to create more opportunities. Like I did a whole radio club too, and all this stuff, and just create opportunities for people to do extracurricular stuff. Because I was one of the kids that I will be in school since like 7 in the morning, and at first I would be there till like 6 p.m. With just there, just hanging with other kids that are just waiting for them to get picked up, you know. And instead of just doing that, why aren't we involved in some type of, you know, activity or whatever that we can pass the time? And so I was constantly just looking for alternatives for kids to just do stuff. Because what the only solution my school in particular had at the time was putting kids, all those kids that will wait in a room and like put one of those Disney movies and not even pay attention to them.
That's so bad. And you didn't even have like one cool teacher who like wanted to, you know, make a change or anything?
No. Aww. It was like they didn't care. And
I
like
had this awesome teacher, an awesome English teacher called Benjamin Tafe, and I wasn't great at school. Like I was kind of just scraping by. And he just made me love film and English. And I feel like that's really important. And everyone should have that one teacher, you know? But maybe I was really lucky to have him, and people don't.
I mean, I had wonderful teachers throughout the years. But yeah. I'm saying at that particular moment,
yeah.
It was like literally like nobody cared.
Yeah.
At least they didn't seem to care.
Yeah.
And yeah, like. I'm always ready for change, so I was doing everything in my power to like make stuff happen, and you know, I created stuff, and that's all I could do.
Well, see, that was actually good for you that you thought no one cared, because it made you go out and do all this creative stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, because I do nannying as well, and it's just so different to when I was growing up. Like, the parents are so focused on the kids.
Mm.
And, like, the families I'm looking after at the moment, they're awesome. But just others I've seen, they're just way too intense on the kids, you know? You just need to let them go out and play and be free. Because that's where boredom comes from. And then after you're bored, then you create stuff, you know?
Pretty much. Mm. It's out of boredom. But, like, honestly, in this type of century, who could get bored? Like, if you get bored, it's because you want to be bored.
I like the feeling of being bored sometimes, don't you? Because it's like time with your thoughts. Like, I remember when I was a kid, I'd be like, oh, I'm so bored. But I remember it being, like, exciting in a way, which sounds really strange.
Mm.
Because then you have all this space to think and do things, you know?
Yeah. But,
and it trains your mind instead of just having like an iPad shoved in front of your face, and even just toys that aren't as interactive, like blocks. Kids who have blocks, I promise you they're going to grow up to be more creative than kids who have like a toy that talks and records you and all that stuff. Don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. There's, there's no reason to be bored just because there's so many distractions. But again, distractions could be a really devastating thing. Because before, like, that's how I got even inspired. It was because I was locked in a room and there was literally nothing to do.
Yeah.
And if I would turn on the TV or whatever it was, I would shoot myself. 'Cause it was the same programs over and over.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was just the whole I want to change. I wanted to see something happen. But now it's just, you know, the whole Vine video. There's YouTube videos. There's podcasts. There's so many things. There's TV still. You know, there's all that PlayStations and all this. Yeah, and it's like you don't really get that alone time. And I was actually thinking, why do people, specifically me, but people in general, seem to generate more ideas like in the shower? Yeah. But it's because that's the only place if you realize that you're by yourself. Yeah, only with your thoughts. And if you will be like that throughout your day, you will have those same thoughts.
Yeah.
It's just, but we are so constant of like, oh, let me, I'm walking. Let me put this iPod in, or you know, I'm home. I need to watch some TV or whatever. Like, I need to be doing something that can distract me from doing something else.
People can't just like sit alone with their thoughts anymore. Like last night, I went out to dinner, and my friend was running a little late, and I was just sitting there, and I was like, you know what, Prue, don't look at your phone. Just like sit here and see what happens. And it was the longest like 20 minutes ever. but it was uncomfortable at the beginning. And then I started sort of paying attention to what was going on around me. And there was this crazy girl sitting next to me talking about all her relationships. And that was more entertaining than anything would have been, you know. I feel like I got a character out of her.
But isn't that phone thing horrible though?
Yeah. Do you think it's just going to be like, it's gonna die down? People will reject it? I hope so.
Man,
like I deleted my Facebook off my phone and all that stuff. I don't have any of that on my phone because I literally was addicted to it.
I honestly don't. I hope so, but I don't think so. I think it's already getting too overpowering. Mm. And for the next 5-10 years, it's going to get even more overpowering.
I reckon there's going to be, like, anxiety. People are going to get anxiety problems over it and stuff.
Yeah,
It's like a drug, man.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty insane, like, how it's all going to shape. Like, have you played that new Grand Theft Auto game?
Nah, man.
It looks pretty freaking real.
Yeah.
Like, it's scary real. Like, when I got it, because I got it the day it came out, I played for 2 days straight. Because I'm a hardcore gamer like that. But then I'm a person that got self-control. I need to step away from the game because the game was getting to my head too much. And when I got out into the real world, I was like, oh, my God, am I in the game?
And you were like, what is happening?
Yeah. And it's crazy. It looks so real. And what they're doing is working towards a way to merge the user, the person, into the game. And when that, I know that's going to happen. It is going to happen. But when that happens, it's going to be crazy. Because it's like, then what do you prefer, being in the real world or being in that world that anything could be possible, you know? Absolutely anything. Like, you die, you came home, but you come back to life, you know? And that's what people want to be. So they want to be. Personally, I want to die. Not right now, of course, but like I don't want.
In the future.
What people are fighting.
Galaxy can drift away, and me and my friend have this theory that solar winds are the cause of like the global warming and everything. We got like really deep into it. But yeah, it just made me think of all of this stuff, and we're so lucky. Like when I was watching this Gravity movie, I was just like, I'm so lucky I get to go home and just sleep in my bed. Like we don't have to worry about, like we don't realize how small our life is. I know this isn't a new thought or anything, but it just sort of blew my mind and I got all existential, you know?
But that's what I'm saying. It's like all those things, you can think about it even if you're by yourself. Like,
yeah, see? And then I went home and thought about that, and I didn't look at Facebook for a whole 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But then in 21 minutes, you looked
at it. I was like, oh, got to update my status and tell everyone about Gravity.
I know. I'm the same way, man, but it's just technology.
It's good for, like, for your acting. Like, you have to have one. I was going to delete it. But then I was like, oh man, I've got to pump my web series and like you know, it's good to see what your friends are creating and Kickstarters and stuff. Have you ever done a Kickstarter?
I have never done a Kickstarter. I have friends that have done Kickstarter, yeah, though.
I did an Indiegogo. A friend, Emma Leonard, and I did one, and we raised like a few grand, and we did a web series called Bougie, and that was really fun. It's great that, like, that type of thing's out there, that you can, you know, raise the money and do it, because up until that point, I was just sort of getting my friends to all do it for free and everything.
Yeah, like that my actually I have friends from Second City, and they were trying to go to this improv festival in Chicago, but they didn't have the money to even travel. And they did this Kickstarter, and they raised their money, and they all went to Chicago and performed improv and came back.
Amazing.
And it's amazing how you get that's possible now. That's what I'm saying.
One of my friends was involved in that, Nicole. I don't know. I remember her doing that, I think.
I mean, she might have done it. There's a couple of teams that have done it before. Yeah. But at least not that team. There's not
Chicago's
nobody
there.
Chicago's
where the improv's at, right?
Yeah.
Have you been? I've not been.
The only thing I've been close to Chicago is the O'Hare International Airport, because I did a connecting flight to come here. But that's it.
Yeah.
I haven't really been in Chicago
at
all.
Have you heard of TJ and Dave? They're these two amazing improv performers from Chicago, from Second City. I saw them in New York, and they were amazing. So good. And I'm just like, man, they should have their own show, you know? But I don't think improv doesn't really translate to TV either, huh?
I mean, there's...
It's such a live, you know, tangible thing. So.
It's a... there's ways to do it. It's just, I feel the execs don't want to do it, and all those people don't want to do it, but there's a way to do it, because there's shows like, I mean, those are more short form games, but like Whose Line Is It Anyway? It's an improv show.
Yeah.
And Wild and Out, the one that Nick Cannon does.
Oh, yep.
That one's also like an improv, but it's more short form games. Like, they do little games and they move on and whatever. But to do improv, there's I don't know if you've seen on Netflix. If I don't know if it's still on Netflix, but there was this thing called ASCAT, which is a show that they do at UCB.
I think I've been to it at UCB,
mm-hmm.
but it's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix.
Oh, awesome. I'm gonna check it.
It's like an hour and 30 minutes or so, and Amy Poehler's on it, and all those Matt Besser, all those founders from UCB, they're doing like improv scenes.
Yeah.
And they do it. It's multi-cam. They have like about 3 or 4 cameras.
And are the players from UCB? Is that them? Oh, sweet. I'm gonna check.
And it's great. That one's great. Like it translates the way they did it and all that. It's also that it has to be multi-cam. Like, it cannot be single cam. It will be too dull and boring.
I'm really into just going, and one of my favorite things to do is just go to indie improv. Like, that's where I caught up with you the other day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think that is so fun, because it is a little bit underground, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's fun to just go and hang out and see how it all starts.
It's fun to see familiar faces on those type of scenes.
Everyone should check out my friend's show. It's called Black Mondays at 8 p.m. at the Complex Theater on Santa Monica.
It's awesome.
That's where I caught up with Steve performing in your team. What's your team's name?
Eldon Farlow. Yeah, I went on stage, and when I performed for 15 minutes or so, and when I came out, I'm like, oh my God, Bruce's here.
Steve,
that's awesome.
Back from the land down under.
I know. And look, if we wouldn't caught up there, we probably would have been lost.
I know. So thank you, Indie Improv.
Thank you, Indie Improv, for reconnecting friends.
Yeah, and you said you've been on your team for a year?
We're going to be in at the beginning of next year, we're going to be a year together.
That's a long time. Good on
I
you,
know,
man. That's awesome.
I know. And it's a great accomplishment to even have a team in L.A. and be for that long, because there's tons of teams that literally they get together and 3 months, they're done.
Yeah.
Because everybody's so busy with stuff, and it's hard to keep a unit.
It has to be like a special. You have to compliment all your team members and stuff, because you can't have people who just want to take over the scene all the time, and others who, you know, it's a fine thing.
Yeah, and I'm not saying like it's been smooth sailing with my team either. Like we have had our share of problems, and we had members been there and they haven't been, they're not there anymore, and things like that, but we made it work. That's all that matters. It's like every
good fun.
Yeah, it's like every great relationship, you just make it work, you know.
You just nod your head and say yes, dear.
pretty much. But yeah, I mean, it's been what, a year since I seen you? More than a year. How what you been doing up to this day?
Well,
you know,
when we hung out, I think that was the first time I'd done Groundlings, and then I kind of just have been working my way through that, and I'm up to the intermediate part now, and then did that web series, did that film, then my visa ran out, so I had to go back to Australia. And then I've just come over for the past 3 months just to hang out and catch up with everyone and say hello. And then I'll be going back. And then I've got an Australian manager who also works over here. So that's really good. But I want to come back here. That's my aim.
Okay, question. Do I have to be Australian to be represented in Australia?
No.
No?
No, probably not. No.
Really?
Yeah, but you'd have to live there.
Oh, okay.
Why? Do you want to get on Neighbors? Or
I'm trying to get everywhere I can whenever they need a multi-ethnic person like me, then totally hook me up. I'm trying to get everywhere I can. But yeah, I'll
see you on Home and Away on the shores of Summer Bay, Steve Dez.
Because I was thinking of getting, like, representation in Canada.
Yeah. But, well, they shoot a ton of stuff there, man. Like, I had this one girl in my class, a really talented actress, who's Canadian, and she's worked so much.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I don't know, since that's considered other territory in other country, you know, I don't know the rules to
it's
all that stuff.
It's very strict. I knew for her, she was trying to get over here to live here, and she had to go through all the same visa processes as I did, and it's really tough.
Yeah,
don't make it easy. Yeah, and if you go, if you come back, I'm just on like the visiting visa because I'm not working or anything, and you have to, if you come in like more than 3 times on this, you get pulled in for questioning and everything.
So, were you smuggling drugs to America?
No, that's what they think. It's like, mate, I just enjoy it here. I like your weather and your people.
So,
let me stay.
So is it a really hard process, like for you in particular, to get visas to come over here?
It's pretty tough. Like, you have to be very determined to get it. And it's also an expensive process, not going to lie. I don't have... There's another visa you can get. I don't know if any Aussies are listening. They probably all know it already. But... yeah, there's an O visa that you can get, which means you can stay over for 3 years, but you can only work in entertainment. So that makes it really tough for people, because you come over here and you want to do acting, but everybody knows that you're not going to be able to make a living off acting like the first 3 years you're here. So,
and what about those people, like, again, dropping her name on, damn, I forgot her name now. The Australian chick.
Rebel Wilson?
Yeah, Rebel Wilson and Matthew McConaughey. Is he Australian?
Nah.
No, he's just American?
Yeah.
He just acts like he's Australian?
Yeah, he does act a bit Aussie, doesn't he? He'd be rough and tumble.
Yeah, so...
I think he's from the Midwest or something.
So all those people, do you think is like they settle it from their country they're from, and like their agents settle all that stuff? Or...
Well, I know Rebel Wilson, I think she came over here on an O-1 visa, but she was very established in Australia. Like, she had her own show, her own 30-minute comedy show.
Oh, really?
She wrote and produced that. And then she came over here and she auditioned for, like, one thing, which was Bridesmaids. And then she went on Conan O'Brien's show and he just really liked her. And then he kind of found out. I just read an article in the New York magazine. This is why I know all of this. He then sort of looked her up and found out that she was a movie star in Australia, like a big star in Australia, and then he kind of gave her this opportunity for her new show. So that's how that happened for her. And then, but I've got other friends who are successful actors, like they work in America. And one friend in particular, I know she doesn't live here. She has a really good agent over here, but lives in Australia, and she auditions through self-tapes. And then if she books the film, then they sort out that visa just for her. So I don't know, there's a myriad of ways that you can do it, but I've got a bunch of friends living here on an O visa, but they're kind of struggling, you know, because you can't work properly. So everyone's poor.
Yeah. Heath Ledger also is an Australian, right?
Yes. But he also was pretty successful in Australia before he came over here. There's this new wave of us of Aussies who are just coming over and they're not that successful in Australia, because I think it's almost harder to become successful in Australia because it is that much smaller and they really do only put the same people on their shows. They rarely give people a chance, you know, new people a chance, and that sounds bad, but it's true. And they also only look at you, like agents only look at you if you've done the 4 years of drama school or whatever, and that's not everybody's path, you know. So
just say I did 4 years of drama school with Mr. G.
Yeah, exactly. Mr. G. I mean, everyone has a different path, but it's so fun coming over here. I'm so glad I did, just to study Groundlings alone, because they don't have that kind of a mentality in Australia. They don't have that kind of focus on sketch comedy and characters, which I think's so helpful. Even if you don't want to do comedy, just to do the improv, it helps in
improv helps in life stuff. Period.
Mate, life is improv.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
just yes and that shit and you'll be right.
Yeah, that's what I found. Like, it's like improv is like we're all playing this we're all big kids. That's what we all are. We were kids once and we just grew up and we're all big kids. And improv is just us playing with each other. Instead of playing hide and seek and things like that, we're playing improv scenes.
Yeah.
We're playing fake to be fake people, be a doctor and all that. We're doing it there.
Yeah.
And life in general is a big improv. When you talk to your mom on the phone and all that, you're improvising. You're not aware of it, but that's what you're doing, you know?
Yeah.
You're just not taking one word suggestion.
Yeah.
You're taking a complaint on the ear.
So helpful. Like one of my friends who is, she works in an office and everything. She just did Groundlings, like the one where you don't have to audition for. And she said it just changed her whole perspective on shit. Like she realized that she wasn't being present. And that's the main lesson that you learn from it.
Yeah.
Just be present and aware.
Yeah, me in particular, I didn't know that much about improv before I came to California. I knew to a certain extent because I had certain experiences with it, but when I really knew about it is when I came out here, and I'm like, I need to study this, and I just dedicated like fully to study it, and I studied in Second City and in UCB and in Groundlings, and it has made me 300 times better of where I was, you know. Like before, I probably wasn't. I've always been outspoken, but I'm a little bit more organized in my cadence of speech and the way I talk in certain topics and certain ways. It definitely has made me better, and it has helped me also connect with tons of amazing, great people. And that's what I love. It's just, and the improv scene is really, it's a great community to be part of. That's one of the communities I don't think I'm ever going to leave. just because everybody's so nice. And
I'm totally a hanger-on. Like, I'm not doing any indie improv at the moment, but I just go to all the shows, and I just love being around the people.
Yeah, that's all I did. As soon as I came out here, I was just going to shows and just watching, and I'm just fascinated by it.
Yeah.
And then afterwards when I had the actual courage and the money to actually take improv classes, because it's not that cheap, folks.
Yeah.
Especially at Groundlings. Groundlings pretty expensive.
Yeah, it is. And I've just gotten into, like, going and seeing stand-up shows as well at the Improv. And, oh, it was awesome. Got to go to the Comedy Cellar in New York.
Oh, my God. Really, that's a dream of mine.
Yeah, it was awesome. Very funny comedians there. And hit up the Improv a couple of times. And I'm going to see you because I'm staying a bit longer.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I'll come see your show at the, where is it? The Comedy Store?
The next one I have, I believe, is at the Improv.
Oh, cool. I love the Improv.
Yeah, I'll let you know, because I'm not extremely sure about the dates and all that, but I know it's like the 12th or the 11th of November.
Okay, I'm going to come see.
So, yeah, it will be pretty awesome. It will be pretty exciting. I don't even know what I'm going to talk about, but we'll see. We'll see, because I've been working with at new materials. So I've been writing all sorts of kind of stuff.
Yeah. What's your main inspiration?
My main inspiration?
Yeah, for your stand-up comedy.
Just life, man.
Just life, yeah.
Because one thing I learned is that improv is not that different from stand-up. I mean, it's
really,
a different beast.
I feel like they're so different because stand-up, it's yourself exposed, whereas improv's like characters and you can hide behind the characters.
Yeah, but like what stand-up comedians do, I mean, everybody has their different styles, but what they point out mainly is the unusual behavior in life, what's weird. And that's what UCB mainly focuses on. Mm-hmm. So if you're an improv student at UCB, transitioning from that to a stand-up comedian is not that hard, because since you're already focusing on what's weird, unusual about life, you can translate that to your stand-up. And so my inspiration is really life in general, because there's tons of odd things in life.
Who's your favorite comedian?
Dave Chappelle.
Dave Chappelle, yeah.
Dave Chappelle is my favorite comedian of all time. My favorite comedians of all time, include Dave Chappelle, Richard Pryor, George Carlin, John Leguizamo, Mitch Hedberg.
George Carlin, because he's got all of his stuff on Netflix.
Mm.
He is hilarious.
Yeah, he's great. He makes, he's the perfect example.
He's so rough.
Of making,
I love that.
Yeah, of making everyday comedy, funny.
Yeah.
Like, he literally, his routine will be like, get the newspaper, sit around, and just make notes.
Yeah.
And that's all he did. And because every day there's things happening, Every day you write something's going to be different from the next day,
Yeah.
Because the experience you had this day is not going to be the same experience you're going to have the next day. So anything that you can relate to in life, it's a plus. It's great. When you fabricate stuff, when you try to make up stuff just because you want to make people laugh or you think it's funny, it's not really that funny. Just because what people laugh about it is because it's true or it's relatable or both. And if it's something mundane, like taking a shake from, where's that shake from?
How gross does that look now?
It looks really gross.
I can't believe I drank that. It's like, mango banana shake, but now it's all separated. I think it's the mango.
What are the names of the little
boba?
Boba, yeah, I have
so
the.
Good.
I, yeah, it's pretty good.
It's weird, but it's
good. Weird. It's really
it's
weird.
Really weird. It's from that cafe just on the corner there, where they have like donuts and stuff.
Okay, yeah,
good.
I had one of those. I can't remember where I had it. I only had one that had that boba thing, and I'm like, this is weird.
It's like tapioca or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I was like, this is really weird, but it's really good.
I don't think it could be good for you though.
You don't think so?
No, that texture can't be good for you.
I bet.
Yeah.
Nah.
It's good.
It's good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I want to know, how you found out about the Groundlings?
Ah, that's a good story. So the first time I came over to America was just for a few months, and I came to actually over to study the Ivana Chubbuck method. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of that?
No.
It's kind of like method acting, but it's by this woman, Ivana Chubbuck, and some of her students include Robin Williams, Charlize Theron, Halle Berry. Anyway, she's awesome. This really intense, serious teacher, and you do scene studies. And I didn't have her because you only have her if you're the master class, but I had this other teacher who was awesome, Daryl. And I was doing this scene, and I am not a crier. I just can't cry, don't like it, like, just not a crier. And I was doing
this
scene.
Have so many crying scenes at the Groundlings.
Did I?
No.
No, I don't think so. Anyway, and there was this scene that called for me to get really emotional, and I was getting emotional but not crying. I was getting sort of more angry, and the teacher just kept pushing me, and he was like, come on, Prue, try harder. You just need to cry. Open that up. And I was just like, fuck you. And I got really mad at him because I felt like he was like pushing me too hard. Mm. So I played the whole scene comedically to annoy him.
Mm.
Like I just took the piss out of the scene, and everyone thought it was really funny. And then this person in my class came up to me afterwards, and she was like, dude, you should go to Groundlings. And I was like, what's Groundlings? And it's just actually right across the street. There, Ivana Chubbuck Studios are on Formosa, and so I just walked across and checked it out, and then enrolled like the next day, and then looked it up, and I was like, wow, Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig went here, this is awesome. And then I got really obsessed with it, actually. When we started, I was going to all of the shows, like, because they have shows Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, yeah. Sunday. I was going to literally like every show, because when you're a student you get the half price tickets or whatever.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just like threw myself into it. How did you find out about it?
For me, it was that I back in Puerto Rico, I became, and I'm still am, obsessed with biographies.
Mm-hmm.
I became a big fan of the whole E! True Hollywood Story. Just seeing how people, you know, all these celebrities that people think, oh, they're perfect or whatever, you know, and then they have all this drug habits and all this crazy stuff happening in their life that people don't even know, or some people know, but the media twisted it off or whatever it is. So I became really obsessed with all that stuff, and that transitioned into reading. So I was reading a lot of biographies and a lot of the Wikipedia pages and all that stuff, and I read a lot about the majority of the schools that I read. The two top ones were Second City and Groundlings. Mm-hmm. And what I knew about it is that Second City had different branches, but the main one, the legit one, the one that the hardcore improvisers come from, is from Chicago.
Yeah.
And Groundlings, there's only one Groundlings, and it's in L.A.
Yeah.
So when I came out here, I was already in my mind like, yeah, I already knew the history to a certain extent of the Groundlings, of like, yeah, Will Ferrell came here, Kristen Wiig, all these people. It's like the character school, the school that people have to go if you want to get into like Saturday Night Live and places like that. So when I came here, I had the dilemma of like, what school am I going to go to? The one I mainly got familiar with, it was Second City, just because I lived off in Hollywood Boulevard, pretty close to it. So I would just walk, and it would be like a 10-minute walk or less. And I would go to all their shows over there. But then I became really good friends with a lot of improvisers there. And they told me, Steve, don't even waste your time over here. They're like, Second City is great. It's awesome in L.A. and all that stuff, but I'm telling you, you're young and you're this and that. You should go to one of the hottest places, and the hottest place right now is Groundlings and UCB. And I was really skeptical about UCB in particular, just because all the improvisers I've seen at that moment from UCB were really blue. Like they literally will start a scene and will be like, "Hey, here's my penis," you know, and it's like that's not really funny, at least to me.
I agree.
And so I was like, I don't want to go there. So I went to Groundlings, and I said first, let me go and see a show, just so I know specifically what I'm getting into. Not just because, oh, Will Ferrell came here and things like that. And I went and I absolutely loved it. Yeah. I saw Cooking with Gas show.
Cooking with Gas.
And on my show, somebody proposed. Like, this was real.
Shut up.
Yeah. Somebody from the audience proposed.
Didn't you get, you got a lottery ticket, didn't you? And you got to perform.
I did.
Yes. Tell me about that.
I did a lottery show at the Groundlings.
Yeah, for everyone
right
who doesn't
before.
Know, explain what a lottery is.
Oh, so basically a lottery show, it's basically the, thank you for that. Yeah, I even forgot. Yeah, you're an awesome co-host. It's basically a show that when you're a student, you put your name on a bucket. And
on a bucket or in a bucket?
In
Steve?
A bucket. In a bucket. Sorry. You put your name in a bucket with a bunch of other names. And if your name hopefully gets called, then you get in the show.
Guys, this is amazing because the people who are the actual Groundlings, like they've made it already. They're in movies and everything, film and television and commercials. And so if you get to actually perform with them, it's like our version of a rock star. It's like meeting Mick Jagger. Like, it's pretty cool. So anyway, continue.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Pretty cool, guys. So they have this thing called the Groundlings Jamboree that is like they were just going to have shows all day. And I went with our friend, Sarah. We went there and she didn't want to put her name because she felt like she was too nervous.
Yeah.
I put my name in and I told her, I don't know why, because I already knew I was going to put my name way before, but I had the feeling of my name was going to get called.
Yeah.
I told her, I'm like, I know my name is going to get called.
Yeah.
And
you were just ready for that shit.
Yeah. And that day we were sitting next to these two Nickelodeon kids. Which was hilarious because they're really famous Nickelodeon kids. She played Sam Puckett on iCarly. Her name is Jeanette McCurdy.
Yep.
And then there's this other kid with black hair and like glasses that he's like in Victorious, I think is the show. They were like sitting next to us and we were like, look, we're Nickelodeon celebrities and whatever. And like, we talked to them, we were pretty nice. And then Mikey Day proceeds to call.
He's so funny.
Yeah, I love that guy. I've been watching him. You know, I was a big fan of that guy since Wild and Out because I was a big fan of Wild and Out with the Nick Cannon show. And then he goes and he picks a name out and says, Steve Dez, come to the stage. And I'm like, oh my God. See, I told you. Like, I was in my mind. Like, I wasn't really super.
That was the secret, Steve. Ask, believe, receive.
Yeah, like I was extremely excited to do it, but in a way I wasn't too shocked just because I told Sarah, like I knew for some reason that I was going to get called. And yeah, and I got to do improv scenes with like Taron Killam that he's on Saturday Night Live right now.
Mm-hmm.
And with Ryan Gaul that he's currently still a Groundlings member, but he's like old. I see him in like every other commercial, that guy.
So and how did it go? Do you remember it?
It went pretty good. I mean, personally, thinking back, I'm definitely have improved a lot
did
since
they
that time.
You a lot, like, or did they? Yeah, it was.
They let me play, but they make they were really what made it even seamless is like they're so good. That they make you so comfortable and, like, you know, good about anything. And, like, even if you make a bad choice or anything, they make it work, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what really good improvisers do, you know. They make you look good no matter what. And they made me look good.
Yeah.
So I loved it.
Did anyone record it or anything? I want to see it.
If somebody recorded it, they should tell me because I don't even know. But the other day, I went to the Groundlings. What's so awesome about it? And I went to see a show, and in the show, you know, a couple of my friends were there, Annie Sertich and Edie Patterson and a couple of people. And
Edie Patterson, I love Bean Dip. who anyone who hasn't type in, follow Edie Patterson on YouTube and look at her bean dip shit. That's bean the funniest dip. Character you will ever see. I saw her. I've seen her do that live a couple of times, and it's just hilarious.
It's a hilarious character. So Edie gave me classes, actually.
Oh, is she a good teacher?
Oh, she's an amazing teacher. She barely teaches, but she gave a master class, and I took it. It got sold out so quick, and I was glad I even got a spot, and it was amazing. It was so great.
I love the two-person improv show with
That's
her.
What she teached us. She teaches us how they do that, like how they run out and
her
they do
and
that.
Mitch Silpa, that the Edie and Mitch Making Love is such a funny show.
Yeah, it's an amazing show.
Yeah.
It's one of the best shows there
Five
is there.
$5, worth it.
Oh, yeah, two-person show and one of the best two-person shows I've seen.
Some Mondays. Well, I don't know.
Well, they change it from time to time. Yeah. Sometimes on Thursdays, sometimes on Mondays.
Yeah,
sometimes
it's really
Tuesday.
Funny. If you guys have a chance to go to that, you should.
Check it out. But yeah, but after the show, that show, Ryan saw me. And I passed by. I didn't, I don't know why. Sometimes I get a comedy, I'm more of a comedy nerd. Like
I'm such a comedy nerd.
Yeah, when I see celebrities, like, legit celebrities, like, for example, Don Cheadle, not Robert Downey Jr., because I got starstruck with him, but Taylor Lautner and those people, I don't get starstruck at all. I go say hi, if anything, and whatever, and leave and keep on doing what I'm doing. But when I see comedy people that for all my eyes, they are like rock stars.
Yeah,
they're like gods.
That's what you want to do. So yeah. It's like you respect them so much because they've gone through what you like hope to achieve.
Yeah, so
totally.
I literally passed by Ryan. I don't even say hi because
like,
I'm
oh my God.
Cause I'm yeah because I'm like that. I'm nervous or whatever. And he comes and he says hi and all that, and he recognizes me from
the show
that we did together. And I'm like, that's so awesome. And
really
but it was pretty awesome, and another thing that happened recently as well is that I was in an audition, and it was like a Dr. Pepper or something, and when I went out, I saw Mindy Sterling, you know Mindy,
yeah.
I saw her sitting down. She was auditioning for some other thing, and she gave me classes, a master class, like a year before. And I'm like, Mindy. And she's like, hey. I'm like, I'm Steve. I'm telling her because she meets people every day.
That. I'm always like, hey, man, Prue from blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I'm like, hey, I'm Steve. I took a class with you last year, this and that, whatever. And she was like super excited to see me. And like, she's like, look at you. And now you're doing what we do. And
yeah.
I'm like, yeah, yeah. And it was awesome.
That's one of those moments.
And that made my day.
Like, because don't you think sometimes you get busy doing stuff all the time, and then when you take a moment to stop, you're like, yeah, I've actually, like, come somewhere, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's exciting. Because in this, you know, in this job, there's no sort of, like, benchmarks, like in other jobs, you know? You're not like, yes, I got a raise or whatever. It's just kind of like you have to evaluate it yourself. So that sounds like one of those moments when you're like, yeah, man. I'm making it.
pretty much. And on that note, we have come to the conclusion of the Steve Des Island podcast. I know, it went pretty fast, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And Prue, is there anything you want to plug?
Just the Winning Formula movie coming out next year. Check it out. And yeah, check out my web series, Bougie. And keep an eye out for Eastern Suburbs Mums.
Are you on Twitter or anything?
Not on Twitter, no.
Why not?
I don't know.
Twitter is so awesome. I love Twitter.
I used to be on it, but then I was just like, this is kind of sick. I'm just like watching what other people, where people are and stuff. I don't know. I'm on Instagram.
On Instagram? Yeah. Do you want people to follow you on Instagram?
Sure. Prudence Amelia on Instagram.
Check it out on Instagram.
Yeah.
And the movie, when's the movie coming out?
February.
Winning Formula. Stay tuned for that. And after you check Prue's stuff, if you have time, only if you have time. Honestly, if you don't have time to check my stuff, it's fine. But if you have, go to stevedes.com just to check out everything Steve Des wise. There's my Twitter, my Vine, and all that stuff. More, you can check previous episodes of the podcast. You can check new episodes of the podcast. over there at stevedes.com. And I want to thank Prue for being an awesome guest.
Thank you for having
You're
me.
Super awesome. You get a high five because you're that freaking awesome.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, no problem. Always, always. It's always it was always great and to see friends that you haven't seen in a long time. Like, it's great to catch up.
Yeah.
And that's honestly one of the reasons I even did this, apart from promoting and all that stuff. And it's also, it's a great tool to catch up with friends and, like, actually have this type of conversation. Like, where else can I have an hour and 30-minute conversation with somebody? It's only here in the Steve Des Island Podcast.
Yes.
And, yeah, guys, I'll see you next time with a brand new episode of this podcast.
You've been listening to the Steve Des Island Podcast. Be sure to visit stevedes.com for more information about this episode, as well as past and future episodes. Rate and review this episode on iTunes. Don't forget to follow Steve Des on Twitter at SteveDesTV and like him on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/SteveDesShow. See you next time.